now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And I'm very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. Each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And this is something that you've heard me say on more than one occasion throughout this broadcast, that this was something that I was trained in. Just, when we start looking at our mental health issues or our physical health issues, just how do we live this out in terms of the larger spiritual existential questions that everybody wrestles with sooner or later? And so I put it into the context of relationships, the relationship that we have with God or the divine, the universe, and relationships that we have with ourselves. You know, who are we when we look at ourselves in the mirror? And who are we to one another? How do we treat one another? How do we see each other? And so forth. And that integration of the spirituality and our mental health is the forte of the work that I do, not only in teaching students, but also in the clients that I see. And it has been just a nice, nice integration. Because I've discovered along the way that the more faithful, shall we say, that we are to the integration of our beliefs and our mental health and the areas in which we struggle with and establishing healthy relationships and healing and finding our voice and so on and so on, the closer we are to the faithfulness of that integration, sooner or later, a wonderful transformation is going to occur. And this is something that I tell clients and students alike. It's like, I can't tell you when that's going to happen, but I can tell you it does happen sooner or later. Okay. It's just inevitable because the more we integrate, the more we heal, the more we, take a very close look at our unforgiveness in our lives or what are some areas in which we need to be released from and to release others through unforgiveness or bitterness and so forth. The more we do that, the more it allows room for our true self to expand. And so this is definitely, the passion of the work that I do. And today's subject is certainly right up that alley. It's entitled, Will the Real Self Please Stand Up? And I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit my website at www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, all one word. So that's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you'd like to be part of the show, I'm always pleased when I can take calls and just interact with the listeners out there. If you'd like to be part of the show, please call in. That number is 888-627-6008. And these broadcasts are also podcasted in case you want to go back and listen again. And you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows if you are so inclined. Well, welcome to Friday the 13th. I was talking with a few of my friends, and no big deal. Friday the 13th, it's not like we haven't had them before. But a couple of my friends were like, oh, yeah, but this one's different because it's now in the days of COVID. And, it's in the year of 2020, and now it's Friday the 13th. And it's like, so what are you saying? You know, like we're doomed. But we have fun with each other. We go back and forth and just kind of, you know, needle one another with our snappy comebacks and just pointing out irony of what each other have said. So, yeah, today is Friday the 13th, and I hope that your heart is doing well today. I hope you are well also. And I also hope that if you are struggling today, you will find that rest and comfort and the peace that you need. And if you're having a great day, which I surely hope that you are, you know, be sure to find a way to pass that joy along to another person. And maybe something even so simple as a genuine smile can make all the difference in the world to another who is struggling to find acceptance and peace and love in their life. And you never know. A simple smile just might be the only smile that that person receives that day. Or perhaps they had said a prayer, or they tossed it out there to the universe to say, please send me somebody who I know cares about me, or I've given up on humanity, so I want to have my faith in humanity restored. And a simple smile or a kind word will do it for that person. That it might even catch them off guard, but they never, ever will forget about that because of the impact that it has made on their lives. And also, when you think about it, you know, it's often the simplest things in our lives that mean so much to others. Like I said, a kind word or a genuine smile, even a gentle nod, or looking at somebody, you know, right in the eyes and talking to them. I mean, these behaviors mean so much and cost nothing to share. In fact, it's often the life-giving gestures that we cannot put a price tag on that are the very things people desire the most in this life and in their relationships. So, speaking of smiling, how many times have we been told this year that we should not forget to smile under our COVID-19 masks? Because others can tell we are smiling just by looking at our eyes. And this is so true. This is something earlier today. I was out at the grocery store here on the East Coast outside of Philadelphia. And I was there and I just said to myself in the car, I said, I'm going to intentionally make eye contact with others, and I am going to genuinely smile under my mask. And guess what? People smiled right back at me. I mean, if you never tried it, try it sometimes. Our eyes indeed smile, and not just in the eyes, but also notice around the eyes and how around the eyes that communicates to others that we are smiling with them. I mean, we don't have to show a toothy grin or anything. Our masks will cover our nose and our mouth, but the eyes do also communicate a smile. So I reassure you not to fret over your laugh lines or your crow's feet. These often emerge as a result of the muscles around our eyes that contract when we smile. And this is why our eyes soften and appear to narrow when we have a genuine smile. And some people's smiles are so large that their eyes seem to disappear every time they do. I'm sure you can probably count on one hand just the number of people who just have that hearty smile. And their eyes just seem to squint. And like I said, don't fret about the laugh lines and crow's feet, because that's a naturally occurring phenomena. That is what's supposed to happen. And of course, the older we get, the more laugh lines or crow's feet we see. And I've also run into a lot of people who are just like, I can't believe I'm getting older. And it's like, yeah, but what have those eyes seen? What have those eyes looked at? How have those eyes changed over the years? Not just in terms of like maybe prescription glasses or sunglasses, but just imagine everything that you've taken in and the number of times that you smiled. And just simply, you know, squinting or smiling in a mirror, we can see those laugh lines or the crow's feet. And I'm going to go on the record here that that's not a bad thing. That is something that I think just shows the character of a person. OK, Okay. Science has even gotten in on this phenomenon. I read a study earlier this week from Evolution and Human Behavior, a journal article, which examined people's eye contact during times when they would share a meal. Just a fascinating study. And the researchers noticed that our eyes follow a certain pattern, namely around nonverbal communication. In other words, when dinner guests smiled at each other, it was very inviting and helped one another relax and enjoy not only their meal, but also their company. And the article also went one step further and noted that whenever we make eye contact with another and we smile and they smile back, this also increases levels of oxytocin. Now, oxytocin, and not, I'm not talking about OxyContin here, that don't get that mixed up, okay? But the neurotransmitter oxytocin, also known as the love hormone, is associated with our emotional bonding and attachment. And it increases the more people gaze at the region of the eyes. And this is why making eye contact between mothers and their newborns are so crucial to establishing healthy attachment behaviors. And as we get older, we maintain that eye contact. You know, let's say that we get older and we move into, like, say, the toddlerhood stages, even early childhood stages, where we want to make sure that we're doing something correct. And so we would always want to look back and check with, say, mom or dad or another caregiver to make sure, you know, if, am I right? Am I safe? Am I okay? Do you approve? And so on and so forth. Okay, that's just the natural occurring phenomena that happens between, you know, children and caregivers. And then as we get older, we are constantly, well, I'll put it to you this way. We are supposed to grow out of that in that, you know, we're always going to look to each other, but always looking outside of ourselves at some point in our lives to be affirmed should at some point shift us to look within for that affirmation and just how we get the strokes that we need, so to speak, and the love. And it's just really building a healthy self-esteem and healthy self-love that we have. But it first starts out with making a very strong eye contact with others as we are being raised. So all in all, I don't know if you're a fan of Freud, but in this sense, Freud was right. The eyes are indeed the windows to the soul of a person, which brings us nicely to the point of the show today. How many of you out there have ever watched The Masked Singer? Anybody? I've only seen it, you know, once or twice myself, just because I'm doing other things at that time the show comes on. But I do like the premise. These singers come out in these grand scale costumes that cover their identity, you know, from head to toe, literally. And then the judges and those who are playing along at home listen to the song and try to guess who that is just based on their voice. Sometimes they guess right. Other times the judges are just plain baffled and they don't know until the big reveal. And when these singers take the masks off, it's like, oh, yeah. That's who it sounded like. Or, you know what? I never would have guessed that. But it's a fun show. So if you've never checked it out, I highly, highly recommend it. But let's consider for a moment just how much masks are a part of our lives and how they're often portrayed in movies or other cultural expressions. If you've ever read anything from Edgar Allan Poe, one of my favorite stories of him is The Tale of the Mask of the Red Death. And it's a story about everybody in a certain town was invited to a grand masquerade ball. And the host of this ball, I believe his name was Prospero, was told that death was going to visit him that night. he just wouldn't know when death would show up. And he spends the entire night trying to figure out, you know, this identity, only to be fooled in the end. He was looking in all the wrong places. He just never did get it, and eventually death was there to meet him. Excuse me. And let's see, another fun movie that everybody that I've talked to always enjoys is Jim Carrey as the Mask. Right, it's this ancient mask that he puts on, and it just exemplifies and really enhances his persona, you know, just who he is. And because Jim Carrey's, I think his Stanley Ipkiss was his name in the movie, because he was very much into cartoons, you know, it's just he took on the persona of one who was just very like a trickster, one who was always playing games, one who was very animated, and so on and so forth. And it was just interesting just to see, you know, putting on a certain mask did for certain people and how that brought out characteristics of them. Well, if you've never seen The Mask, I invite you to, you know, maybe someday check out the Broadway musical Phantom of the Opera. This is a great one of the great Broadway musicals of all time, and I think they had made it into a movie or once or twice. But anyway, the Phantom was always seen wearing a mask. It hid his identity, and it aided him in his mystique, as well as instilling fear into others. I mean, like, who is this guy running around creating havoc, killing people, and so on and so forth? Just, we need to know, who is he? And because we didn't know who he was, people feared him. And that instilled a lot of terror into the hearts of people. But I won't give it away. I won't give it away if you've never seen it, okay? So if you're not a fan of The Mask or The Phantom of the Opera, what about Mardi Gras, right? It's a time down there in New Orleans. A lot of dancing, a lot of music, great food. And, of course, people are wearing masks. And it's always fun, you know, because it's like, yeah, okay, I don't know who you are, and you don't know who I am. But we're there to, you know, celebrate or, you know, dance and listen to music, eat good food and so forth. It's just a wonderful, wonderful time. And even if even in Chinese opera, I'll say, masks are often worn by performers. And the masks that they wear help the audience instantly recognize who are the heroes or the villains or the allies or foes, regardless of any scene that they are portraying. But have you ever noticed that all masks have one thing in common? No matter how elaborate or simple the design, they all ask this question: who am I? Who is this person behind this mask? Indeed, wearing masks often adds a level of mystery to the whole event. And let's be honest, you know, it's fun to put on masks to see how we look or to have others try and guess who we are. But what would happen if we became so comfortable wearing our mask that we decide to keep wearing it every day? Would that be a little weird? Or is there another reason? See, not only do masks have this question built into them as, well, who am I? But also, how do I want to be seen? I mean, that kind of changes things, doesn't it? Because it's one thing to hide your identity from others, to try and let them guess who you are. But it's quite another thing to actively project how you would like to be seen by others, and therefore, hopefully, be treated accordingly. Well, let's do a little imagination here this afternoon. Imagine that for a moment you hold in your hands a mask that projects to others how you would like to be seen. Okay, you have it? You do? Okay, good. Now, put it on. and ask yourself this question. What qualities do you admire about this mask? What is it about the mask that frightens you a little or frightens you a lot? And once you have the answers to these two questions, ask yourself a third question. What do I fear the most that others will know about me if I take off this mask? Will they just see my face, or will they see something else? Will others know that I wear this mask because I really don't know who I am underneath? Because it just might be too risky to show myself to myself, let alone show myself to others? I mean, these are the real questions that confront us every day. These are the questions in which we search out these answers for, because underneath there is such a genuine discovery. But the mask often shields us from pain, or shields us from, let's say, a perceived rejection from others. You know, it does serve a purpose in our lives. But what do you do when you come to the realization that the masks, and masks, I should say, that we have been wearing no longer serve us because something has changed in us? I mean, just think about for a moment the number of masks that you wear throughout any given day. You know, don't we have a different mask for, let's say, work, which dictates our behavior, you know, how we behave on the job and so forth. What about when we get home? Do we have a mask then, or, you know, perhaps we're with friends? And maybe this is where the phrase, you know, let your hair down comes from. You know, that we can relax and we can take off that mask and we can kind of be ourselves. And, you know, when we're alone with ourselves, like, nobody's going to bother us. No, we don't have to worry about being seen for who we are. Well, what about the masks that we wear when we are with family members? Or what about the masks that we wear when we're shopping, or when we go out in public? What's that face that we want to present to the rest of the world? And here's a fun one. What kind of mask do we put on when we go to, let's say, church or a synagogue or a mosque? What about when we go to a sporting event? Is there a kind of mask that we're expected to wear, which then would dictate our behavior? As in, if you're in this social setting, this is how you have to perform. This is what's expected of you, and so on and so on. As much as we want to deny it, everyone wears different masks at different times. Well, the different kinds of masks that people wear every day was something that really fascinated psychiatrist Carl Jung, except, you know, he referred to a mask as the persona. And I think I'd mentioned this before, but Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud were buddies. They were really tight, and they got along well, except when it came to their disagreements about the unconscious. Freud had this unconscious definition whereby that's where pathology, you know, was just keeping that down. And so to get at, you know, how to heal from your pathology, you had to, you know, explore the unconscious and see it for what it was. And then once you had that aha moment or that awareness, that unconscious fear or the unconscious projections of terror or whatever it was would just simply go away. I know I'm oversimplifying Freud here, but Carl Jung was just almost the exact opposite, you know, because he talked in terms of a collective unconsciousness, in that when we are unconscious, whether it be with our dreams or in another state, we all experience the similar kinds of symbols. We all experience similar kinds of, let's say, the shadow side of ourselves. And he, out of this understanding, he develops this, you know, the persona or the kind of mask that we wear, which really meant just how do we project how we would like to be seen out into the world. And the more Jung and Freud talked about this, the more they fought over it. And Freud said, well, you really can't be my friend anymore unless you believe like I do. And so Carl Jung just said, well, I'll see you then. And so Carl Jung went on to have a really, very fine career and just helping a lot of people just understand more of the collective unconsciousness. And there's so much more to Carl Jung. I'm just, like I said, I'm just simplifying both Jung and Freud. So according to Carl Jung, a functioning persona is part of a person's soul. That means that the persona is connected to the core of a person. So, for example, let's say in public, we present, as Jung would put it, an exaggerated version of ourselves, which we hope will make an impression on others. And if we create this version of ourselves, that might be attractive to some and not so attractive to others. Okay. And quite frankly, the character we display in our jobs or careers is not the same as at home. But Jung went so far as to say that this persona is actually the bridge to the outer world, because this is how we adapt in dealing with the world. I mean, we may not like who we are, or we may not even know who we are. So we look to society to help define us, and therefore help us find our place, as if that's all there is to us and that we're, you know, that's ever all we're ever going to be. So the problem is that many times a certain kind of behavior is, shall we say, forced on people by society, and therefore people feel compelled to live up to these expectations, which is really in the end a no-win situation. Because even if we think that we get close to coming up to or living up to the expectations of others, those expectations will start to change. So it's almost, we get close to it, then it moves, and then we get close to that, and then it moves again. And it's just, there's no way. Because living by the expectations of others, it's really setting us up for a defeat. There's just no way that anybody's ever going to feel as though they have lived up to the expectations of others, because it's not designed for anybody to achieve that, because the expectations are always moving. So it's a vicious cycle, and it's actually a cruel joke, you know, that we find out in the end. It's like, I can't believe I kept falling for that. You know, kind of like the Peanuts commercial, or not commercial, the Peanuts story, where Lucy has a football and she's just kneeling down and she's holding the football as if, you know, Charlie Brown thinks he's going to kick it. And after so many tries of, you know, Lucy pulling the ball away, and, you know, and she keeps doing it, and Charlie Brown keeps thinking, well, maybe this time I get to kick that football, because she's not watching. And so Charlie Brown sneaks up, he gets a running start, and then boom, she pulls the ball away. Charlie Brown goes flying in the air and lands flat on his back, only to have Lucy stand over him and then berate him for being such a blockhead and falling for it over and over and over again. Same thing happens to us whenever there's expectations put on us by people who are putting out those projections from a place of their own woundedness. They don't realize it, but they're going to keep moving the expectations. They're just, in no way are you ever going to get close to it. But as a result, you know, people find that they often, when they get caught up in a situation like that, they often cannot separate themselves from their persona or a favorite mask that they wear. And they typically end up living their lives not knowing, you know, who they are, their real self. And because people settle for an alternative version of themselves, they also take on the narrative or stories that go along with wearing certain masks. For instance, I had a client one time who was a carpenter all his life. He was highly skilled, and he was certainly proud of his work, and he had every right to be. You know, he would often show me pictures of houses that he would build, or cabinets that he'd made, or just beautiful bookcases and so forth. I mean, just highly, highly talented. And I noticed that when he introduced himself, he did so by identifying with his profession. He said, "Hi, I'm Roger, and I'm a carpenter." And throughout our sessions, he would use various carpentry terminology, such as when he would describe himself. He would say things like, "I always measured my life against the plumb line of what was expected of me." Or he would also say, "Sometimes, you know, it just doesn't pay to cut across the grain in life." And the more he talked about his life in this carpenter language, the more I kept wondering if he knew anything else, let alone, did he really know who he was? I mean, you take him away from, let's say, carpentry, who is he then? You know, his whole identity was caught up in what he does, because that's something that's very tangible to look at and say, "I did this. I produced that." And so it's just an extension of how he saw himself. So in one session, we got on the subject of how he would like to be remembered, and what is the one thing he would like others to know about him apart from his life as a carpenter. Well, to my surprise, this question nearly floored him, no pun intended. He didn't really know how to answer that question, because he never asked that question about himself. And it took us a long time to work through that question, you know, who are you? Because for Roger, he felt as if he would find his true self, he would be disappointing and betraying his family promises and vows of always working with his hands to put food on the table, which is indeed a noble profession. But discovering who we are is not the same thing as how we live that out on a daily basis, you know, in like the work that we do. That's how we live it out. But really, who we are, that's asking core questions of ourselves. And oftentimes, society wants us to become comfortable wearing their masks because we wouldn't want anybody to be uncomfortable with us. So we kind of play along with that game. But does society really want us to be so authentic that we don't need a mask, metaphorically speaking? And before we answer this, let's also consider just for a moment how masks also shield us from experiencing further pain in our lives. Well, anybody out there remember the old Simon and Garfunkel song that came out a long time ago entitled, "I Am a Rock"? Okay, I'll just refresh your memory with the lyrics. "A winter's day in a deep and dark December, I am alone, gazing from my window to the streets below on a freshly fallen silent shroud of snow. I've built walls. I've built a fortress steep and mighty that none may penetrate. I have no need of friendship, because friendship causes pain. Its laughter and its loving I disdain. Don't talk of love. Well, I've heard the word before. It's sleeping in my memory, and I won't disturb the slumber of feelings that have died. Because if I have never loved, I never would have cried. I have my books and my poetry to protect me. I am shielded in my armor, hiding in my room, safe within my womb. I touch no one, and no one touches me. I am a rock. I am an island. And a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries." And this is how it is for many people. We often spend our lives drinking poison and expecting others to get sick. You know, nothing comes in to touch us, and we don't, you know, reach out to touch another person. And we need to release ourselves from these statements of, like, say, we would say, "I will never do that again. I will never love again. I will never open myself up again." But what breaks these statements? Well, being honest with ourselves as we take off that mask that shields us from any and all psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds. What masks have you worn throughout your life? Which ones are you comfortable with? Which ones would you like to release from your life? Well, in the second half of the show, we're going to take a look at what releases us from having to wear these masks and to really embrace such a wonderful freedom. So I would really love to hear your heart on these matters. So again, if you'd like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I will be taking your calls after the break. So again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, I just want to share a word about next week's show. Next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time, it's entitled See You on the Dark Side of the Moon. Now, before you accuse me of ripping off Pink Floyd, I'll be talking about how we can make friends with our shadow side, okay? There's the reference, the dark side of the moon. So that side of our personality that contains all the parts of ourselves that we really don't want to admit that we have, but we need to. You know, the shadow often shows up in, you know, at the beginning, like really on unconscious levels. It might come out in our dreams or Freudian slips or, you know, something. And then it moves into our conscious levels as we understand those parts and we heal and we integrate them into our lives. So be sure to tune in next Friday afternoon to listen to Reclaiming Authenticity. See you on the dark side of the moon. Okay, well, earlier in the show, we were talking about the various masks we wear in life. Not only do these masks, project out this question, like I said, of who am I, but also, how do I want to be seen? And this really changes it up for us. Because it's one thing to, you know, hide your identity from others and to try and let them guess who you are. But it's quite another thing to actively project how you would like to be seen by others and therefore to be treated accordingly. And I raised the question, what would happen if we became so comfortable wearing our masks that we decided to keep wearing it every day? I mean, like, let's say we never take it off. Okay, except, okay, metaphorically speaking, but, you know, but, you know, when we get home, we just, okay, I can be myself, but you know, very quickly put it back on if somebody else shows up because, well, we can't allow ourselves to be that vulnerable because of how we've been hurt in the past or criticized or, well, remember, that's not what you promised, you know, and we're almost like wearing chains, except we put a mask on and we end up believing that's all there is to us. Okay. Well, when we discover our authentic self and we get used to that authentic voice of ours and we start living as an authentic self, many people often assume that in our authenticity, that should be enough to shield us from negative reactions from others. Well, it doesn't. You know, and this is actually to be expected at times, because along with authenticity also comes authentic energy. And this will create an effect in others. Some will be drawn to it, whereas others will not. And regardless, you know, when you no longer need an emotional or psychological or spiritual mask, your authentic self will no longer be affected by the opinions or reactions of others. And when others cannot affect your authentic self, well, it may not always go so well for them. I've seen this many times in family dynamics, when one family member begins to change. And it's kind of ironic, because the family says, we want this person to change, but when change actually starts to occur, we didn't mean that. You know, we didn't assume, you know, that this was going to be, you know, something we need to do also. You know, it's like that person just needs to change, but leave us alone. And it's like, it doesn't work that way. You know, when one person changes in a family and transforms, the whole family is affected by it. Like, the family is that one unit. And when others cannot affect your authentic self, there's this kind of a scramble to counterbalance this effect, or they struggle to maintain the dysfunction in the family that they've grown accustomed to. You know, because they may feel intimidated because what authenticity demands of them. You know, it's like, I got used to knowing you as you were, but now I don't know who you are, and therefore I don't really know who I am then. You know, and then they're just, you know, they're confronted with that. It's like, what do you mean I have to take a look at myself too? You know, and it's just, well, of course. You know, some may be disappointed, and ironically, some may even feel betrayed or hurt or rejected. Okay. However, our fullest potential is waiting. You know, but what gets in the way of that? We can say, yes, it's our ego, it's our pride, it's our arrogance, it's unforgiveness, it's our anger, it's our rage, it's our wounds. But really, underneath all that, there's this unwillingness to forgive and release these wounds, as well as being released from deep-seated burdens or released from guilt and shame imposed on us by society or family. And let's take it one step further. Have we ever been asked to be released from the family secrets you vowed to carry? Maybe even in silence. You know, somewhere along the way, you were like saying to yourself, I'm not going to tell anybody because this is my secret. I'm not going to share anything because, well, we don't air our dirty laundry. And you go through life having to carry that secret, which weighs you down in incredible, impossible aspects or characteristics of your life. One of my favorite analogies of just natural growth, not just in, you know, related to the earth, but also related to ourselves, is the image of the acorn. You know, you just look at this little acorn, and if you can wrestle it away from the squirrels, you know, you've done a good thing. Yeah, after you're done, throw it back to them, because they need it more than we do. But when we look at an acorn, you know, and we see the potential for this great oak to emerge. But yet it's more than just putting it in the ground. It's more than just it pops up from the soil, the roots go down and so forth. But as long as the tree from the acorn is allowed to grow, it'll be fine. But there's oftentimes a lot of obstacles along the way, which will hinder its growth. And so those who plant trees know what it takes to get rid of the obstacles. The same thing is true in our lives. You know, there's so many things that weigh us down, so many things that we just get tangled up in or caught up in that we struggle with it, and we never find as if that we are growing or maturing or growing in our faith, whatever terminology you want to use. But our job then is to get rid of those things that are hindering the growth process, so to speak, and the natural propensity towards growth will occur. So I often say that we're our own worst enemy. So how do we get out of our way? Okay. But let's just start with the kind of vows or the promises or the secrets that we hold for the sake of ourselves or the sake of somebody else. And it literally is killing us. Now, for example, perhaps we may have said at some point in our lives, I will never trust another person. Or I will never forgive that person. And we end up cementing ourselves in this casket of bitterness. So how do we release ourselves from these beliefs that no longer serve us? Well, we have to begin by perhaps understanding the origins of where these beliefs and perspectives come from in the first place. Okay. And quite often, as we start looking as like, well, just I wonder how far back this goes. We often are led back into our ancestors, you know, those who have lived before us and the stories that were handed down to us and what we can remember and what has been told to us over the years. And quite often it's, again, ironic that whenever we realize that we're holding on to, let's say, a family secret or a belief that no longer serves us, we're probably not the only ones who've have been doing this. You know, perhaps our ancestors have been holding on to secrets and carrying burdens as well. It's just that they didn't know how, let's say, to release themselves from that or to release others. So, but there is just a wonderful ritual that we can do, just a little ceremony that can not only release us, but also to release them. Because the relationship that we have with our ancestors cuts across all time and space. You know, these relationships are not bound by, you know, shall we say, Earth. Okay, not bound by time and space. So just want to share with you a little bit of the ceremony that I do, a little bit of the ritual that I do whenever I come up against, or what I should say, whenever I discover, yeah, okay, that no longer serves me. I gotta forgive myself, and I have to release myself, or I have to release another person. Okay, so just invite you to find a quiet place where you're not going to be disturbed. Yeah, turn off the phones. Okay, photographs or images of your family or ancestors are just a great way to recreate visual cues. And I highly encourage you to include them in this healing process. And if this is the first time doing such healing, I would recommend that you set your intention to work, let's say, with only your parents or your grandparents or even great-grandparents, just for now, okay? So just make sure you're not going to be disturbed and center your soul through prayer or meditation, whatever works for you. However you quiet yourself, however you ground yourself, and set your intention to consciously connect with your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, or ancestors, and offer healing for those who need to be released from, let's say, that they are stuck in something very traumatic that had happened decades and decades ago. And it's at this point, it's also wise to set your intention to be released from any psychological, emotional, and or spiritual wounds that you may be carrying unconsciously. And certainly be honest with yourself about any known offenses that you are not ready to forgive. It is quite an honest prayer to say, I'm not ready. But I would like to be someday. Okay, so be honest with yourself as to where you are, you know, the known offenses that you're just not ready to forgive. But yet, at the same time, ask God for the grace that is needed to recognize if there are any underlying, just say, misperceptions or assumptions about your ancestors or their effect on you and begin with these questions. I forgive myself for the lessons, rules, and values that I was taught as a child that harmed me. And I release myself from these wounds. What were the lessons, rules, and values that you were taught as a child? Which ones harmed you? Which ones do you still cling to? Which ones would you need to be forgiven of? Which ones do you need to forgive others for? And which ones need to be released? And who taught you such lessons? What emotions come up when you think of that person or persons? Do you need to forgive them? Do they need to forgive you? Do you need to release them? Which lessons do you agree with? Which ones do you still hold to? Because they are, you know, working for you. They do serve a purpose in your life. And which ones have you discarded? And how have family secrets benefited the family? How have family secrets burdened the family? And again, this is a tough one because a lot of people struggle with, I don't know how to release this. But quite simply, setting your intention to say, I am no longer able or willing to carry the burden of a family secret. And therefore, I forgive myself for thinking that I had to be the one to carry it. And I release myself from carrying it any longer. And I release others who have been carrying it or holding it against me. Any physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual wounds that you need to forgive, to let go of, or to be released from? At this point, it's a good time to just make note of those. And what, or I should say, how can thinking about these, contemplating, meditating on these, how can you move closer to forgiving and releasing? And what's the internal message these wounds say to you about you? Does that perception still serve you? Where does this, do these perceptions hold you back? Where do you feel bound by them? And so therefore, you need to say, I release myself from these wounds. What are the wounds that you believe you need to hold on to, and why? What is keeping you from releasing yourself or forgiving yourself or releasing others and forgiving others? Just why are you hanging on to them? Not in a judgment because you're hanging on to them because they serve a purpose, but what is that purpose? You know, if you're in search for your authentic self, at some point we realize that those wounds that we've been holding on to, thinking that they do us a service, has to go. We just simply cannot live like that. The burden is too great. And when was the last time that your family or your ancestors told you they loved you? Well, let's say you've never met your ancestors. Well, that's what pictures are for. You can certainly, you know, just say, look, we've never met, although we have the same blood running in our veins, the same DNA and so forth. Knowing that they loved you, even though that they have never met you, or perhaps some ancestors did not love you, and you've carried that burden of, well, this is my secret. Well, now it's time to heal. It's time to be forgiven and to forgive and to release. And what other family stories do you remember? Because you've heard me say this before, that we have within us just a great, great gift of storytelling. However, we get caught up in telling our stories the same way over and over and over again. And those wounds never have a chance to heal. But when we ever But when we embrace our authentic selves, we can rewrite the stories. Oh, we'll have the facts and figures. That'll always be there. But it's how we tell the story. Telling our story from a place of healing and strength. Telling our stories from a place that gives life instead of reinforcing wounds. So consider the masks that you wear in your life. They all serve a purpose. They all are there for a reason. Is it to shield us from further wounding, or is it a projection of how we'd like to be seen by others? Well, these are questions that each and every one of us have to answer for ourselves. But the whole key to moving into authenticity is to be completely honest and to ask ourselves the very, very tough questions. Who do I need to forgive? What do I need to forgive? And how can I release them? Which ones need to be released? Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I wish you the very best. I can't wait for you to join me next Friday when we start looking at seeing you on the dark side of the moon. Until then, please be safe, take care, and God bless. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.